Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Come along and be my party doll. Come along and be my party doll. Come along and be my party doll. I'll make love to you, I'll make love to you.
It is the Savage Nation. Chick-fil-A spokesman dies suddenly. You know, I don't even know what Chick-fil-A is, but apparently the godfather of Chicago has taken umbrage with this chicken chain for reasons I don't even know, but the poor chief spokesman dropped dead of a heart attack today. Nice man, middle-aged man, wife, three sons, grandchild, dies of a heart attack. Whatever happened to free speech? What did the Chick-fil-A stand do or company that made the godfather of Rahm Emanuel condemn them from the podium of the mayorship of Chicago? I don't even know what he said. Listen what else is going on in your insane country under Obama. Because of the meanness, because of the intolerance, because of the viciousness of the psychopaths on the left, here's a question for you. Do crosses at Catholic University violate the human rights of Muslims? Now, such a question on the face of it is insane. But Muslims are saying a cross at a Catholic university violates the human rights. Who do you think put that in the Muslims' heads? The ACLU. Air Force removes God from logo. Obama leaves God out of Thanksgiving address. School removes God from song. Rahm Emanuel says Chick-fil-A values are not Chicago values. Anti-bullying speaker, you know what they are, the most bullying people on the planet. Anti-bullying speaker curses Christian teens. And finally today, elderly woman told she can't fly the American flag. Is this the country that you want to live in? Is this the country that you think your ancestors fought for? Is this what this has come to, that violent left-wing psychopaths have destroyed freedom of speech? And I'm supposed to focus on the Olympics. The Summer Olympics take place every 4 years. Do you care about the Olympics? Will you watch or tune out? I mean, I'm sure at some point I'll see somebody doing something. I'm not one of these people waiting to see it. Is anyone waiting for the Olympics and why? How many Olympics can we watch in our lifetime? It's like elections by now. They seem to go on at all times forever, 24/7. There's always an election going on. There's always a circus going on. Are the Olympics anything more than a massive international circus meant to distract the public while the leftist global elite keeps feeding at the trough and stealing our rights? It's unbelievable to me. There's a lot of other stories. I mean, we haven't yet dropped the sewer pipe of Hollywood, which has twisted our culture into pretzels. Yesterday was the epitome of it when Harvey Weinstein calls for gun control. And I said, what we need is Weinstein control, not gun control. Cymbal shot. I mean, I think that we need Spielberg control, not gun control. I think, there you go. I think we need Weinstein control, not gun control. Yes, now you got it. I think we need sewer pipe cleaning instead of gun control. All right, well, I think we made the point. It's just been revealed that the Colorado mass murderer was seeing a university psychiatrist prior to the shooting. Now, who do you blame? The shrink? I can't blame the shrink. Their profession is given over to total acceptance and total tolerance. You have to understand the mindset of a shrink. Anyone in the healing professions, meaning psychiatrist, psychologist, lay therapist, whatever, their entire field is given over to non-judgmentalism. So if a guy comes in and says, oh, I'm having fantasies about shooting up a movie theater and killing people, she'll ask him if his father exposed himself to him when he was 2 years old. Well, he'll say, did your mother do something to you? Come back in three. Well, let's say I'll see you for three. I have three sessions. Come back in 2 months. They make no value judgments. The whole society has been taken out of the church and into the psychiatrist's chair, which is why we've fallen apart. See, when there are no values, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not steal, etc., then anything is possible, and then we have America today. And, of course, that's why we're living through this psychosis that we have today, where a Muslim would have the nerve, the audacity, to attend the Catholic university and say that the cross violates my human rights. 1-800-449-8255. Chick-fil-A spokesman dies of a heart attack. The president of Chick-fil-A exercises his constitutional rights. He expresses views an overwhelming majority of Americans have upheld at the ballot box, by the way. See, every state that has put on the ballot gay marriage has been knocked down in, I think it's 17 states. So this guy expresses his opinion, and suddenly the mayor of Chicago says he's an anti-American. And the poor spokesman, who probably no one ever heard of Chick-fil-A before this, except people who eat there. If there was one here, I'd go try the chicken now. Is there a difference between one chicken stand and another? I personally eat a lot of chicken. I don't like this stuff, but it's the only thing available in supermarkets that I can generally eat that's hot. Safeway has a good chicken. The local market has a bad chicken. Safeway has for $5-6, you know, if you're hungry, you go into a Safeway, you get a hot chicken, you get a potato, you got a dinner. What more do you need? Unbelievable. What's this over the chicken thing, Chick-fil-A? The guy probably never had such pressure in his life. If he lived 1 minute in my shoes, he would have been dead at 13. I'm glad that he never had to face what I face every day. But what is it, the food and the he probably ate a lot of the fried chicken in there. Probably the pressure from, first of all, my prayers go out to the spokesman's wife, children, and grandchild. That's number one. The hatefulness coming from the left killed him. The hatefulness of the left killed this man. Rahm Emanuel's petty boycott killed this man, in my opinion. 1-800, has anyone ever eaten Chick-fil-A? I don't know what it is. Is it a chain only in Chicago? Can they now roll out across America with the publicity? Certainly not in San Francisco. Chick-fil-A would be banned in San Francisco, that's for sure. Let's not make any dirty jokes here. But the Chick-fil-A cannot come to San Francisco. Went to church with chicken. I knew I'd get chicken callers. There's no Olympic callers. I'm in a bizarre mood. I'm in a bizarre mood because here I go again. I had a flight to New York 2 weeks ago. Why? I didn't have to. The family went. I had to go 3 days. Okay? So they know I hate traveling. Now, it's a family story. He doesn't go anywhere. Leave him alone. I'm going again on an airplane tomorrow. Again, so I'm a little bizarre because I don't particularly like flying. It's not fear of flying. It's the upset, leaving the dog. I missed the dog already in advance. I feel like something was ripped out of my heart before I'm even gone. Do you ever get that feeling that it's called Weltschmerz in German? And it's a feeling of overwhelming loss, even though there's no loss. It's like a sadness. Every time I go on a trip, I get sad before I leave. Why? It's like closets full of clothing I don't even wear. I miss it already. No, it's a funny thing. Like, I walk around my house, a little house, right? I see all these pants and shirts pregnant with expectation, all neatly pressed, hanging from hangers. I know I'm never going to wear most of them. I wear the same clothing almost every day, and then I switch and wash it and wear another. I don't get dressed up. I'm not Donald Trump. I'm not a tie and suit kind of guy. I hang out by myself. But the thing is, just leaving my clothing in the closet disturbs me. I have a lot of trouble packing because I don't know what to take and what to leave. So you have a choice. Either leave everything and take nothing, or then you start saying, well, what should I leave? I don't know what I'm going to do there. So I take a bathing suit and a short. I wind up wearing one short sleeve shirt and one pair of pants and a hat. And I change, and that's about it. I'm going to go surfing again is what I'm going to do. But it's too hot to surf. The water's 87 degrees now in the ocean in Florida. And I'm going there. Would you believe it? Why? Family wants to go there. I'm going. I don't like being alone. Horrible. There's a limit to how much you can be alone. I'm going to sit here and click the channels at night, and there's going to be another Olympic screaming. I don't want to see it anymore. Who's watching the Olympics and why? Why does anyone watch that? Why does anybody watch the Olympics? I don't understand. You haven't seen enough Olympics for the rest of your life? How many shot puts can you see? How many times can you see them getting excited over this? Why do people like this kind of stuff? All right, I admit I'm not a normal person in that regard. I'm not an average, normal sports nut. There are people who are intelligent, I understand. There are people who I understand graduated the 7th, 8th grade even who watch sports. Some even allegedly went to high school and they still watch sports. I don't understand it myself, but look, I accept it. It's a big world, 5, 6 billion people by now. And a lot of them seem to get excited by it. It's mainly kind of a third world thing. I would, honest to God, I think that the lower your education, the higher your interest in sports. I haven't done an actual study. Is that sacrilegious that I insult a few million people by accident just now? Yeah, I didn't mean to. It's absolutely not intended. But let me explain the business I'm in. Let me explain the thin line I'm in. I read you the headlines, didn't I? Chick-fil-A spokesman dies suddenly because of the pressure that they were put on by Rahm Emanuel, right? Then I read you some other stories that are hard to believe. Muslims are claiming crosses at Catholic University violate their human rights. The Air Force removes God from the logo. School removes God from a song. Anti-bullying speaker curses Christian teens. Elderly woman told she can't fly American flags. So the business I am in is such that the minute I say hello, I alienate half the audience. 50% of the people listen to the show waiting to be insulted. The other 50% like me an awful lot. So whatever I say will attract tremendous reactions, both pro and con. That's the thin line that I walk on. So isn't that what free speech is all about? How many times have I told you that the entire intent of free speech is to, in other words, if you're not saying something that agitates people, then you may as well not say it at all. Then you're not really speaking your mind. You're being polite, which is okay. It's okay to be polite. But if you're in the area of commentary, which I'm in, if you are not getting people angry, some people angry, then what's the point of being in the area of commentary? Then you're not using the First Amendment. The First Amendment was made to protect speech that agitates people. Don't you understand that? That free speech means that speech will, by definition, agitate some people who don't agree with you, and that's what the First Amendment is for. I'm trying to educate America. It's almost impossible with the dumbness out there. The morons who sit in a movie theater with 3D glasses inside their head, born with 3D glasses behind their retinas, born to sit in the seat and listen to what the garbage that's put out by those who manufacture the sewage. Just born. So if I say things that please some and offend others, I'm exercising my First Amendment right. Isn't that correct? Do I have to remind you that if people are offended by anything that they hear, that's too darn bad? That we live in a free country. We don't live in the ex-Soviet Union. We don't live in North Korea where you get shot for insulting the president. Or is that the country you would like to live in? If so, then I suggest you become a member of MSNBC's new Stormtroopers, because obviously MSNBC believes in no free speech. They never have anybody on who disagrees with them. Look what happened to CNN today. You didn't even hear about that? They fired the president. Why did they do it late on a Friday afternoon? Because most morons who are watching, or media watchers already, their mind is on some girl in a pair of shorts running in London. You're crazy. They fired the head of CNN. Why they fire him? They're so biased to the left that no one watches the channel anymore. Nobody watches it. Nobody to speak of. I'll be right back. Savage.
I think I know the answer to this, but how many times have you been in love in your life, properly in love?
Properly in love?
Yeah.
Once.
This was only the only woman for you ever?
This is, yes.
True
love.
This
is the only woman I fell in love with. I mean, I was a senior in high school, for Pete's sake, so I fell in love with Anne. Hook, line, and sinker, she caught me, and I was lucky enough to bring her into my life, and we've been in love ever since.
And the same for you?
Amazing.
This is my true love.
It's enough already. That's all I can tell. I'm a little cynical. No, I believe him, though. The thing is, there are people who feel that way. It's like Ozzy and Harriet, which is incredible. I'm thrilled that we're about to have a real American couple again in the White House, in my opinion. Now, why do I say real American couple? I know that's offensive to many of you Obama worshippers. Let's go back in time. We don't know where Obama was born, even though there's a rigged up birth certificate or there isn't one. We don't know whether he's a Christian or a Muslim or an agnostic or an atheist. We don't really know. Michelle Obama, God bless her soul, said this is the first time I'm happy to be an American when her husband became president. You know, these things kind of stick in your mind. The bowing to every foreign dictator. You know, these kind of things tend not to leave your memory too quickly. So when we get an Ozzie and Harriet into the White House, you know how they're going to be ridiculed by the vermin on the left. You know, do you have any idea what this is going to do to the Hollywood crowd? A couple married with five great sons with grandchildren. No divorce, no affairs. They can't dig anything up on them because they're too clean. Do you have any idea what an affront this is to Katzenberg, Matzenberg, and Spielberg? Do you have any idea what this does to Weinstein, Katzenberg, Matzenberg, and Spielberg? Do you have any idea what this does to them? Their entire structure is threatened by the Ozzie and Harriet Romney couple. So, you know, it's going to be quite a time after they win. The Queen parachutes in. I don't understand the Olympics myself. I do know they're super people with regard to ability to do things, mainly with balls and running. I don't quite. It's so out of my. I know it sounds like I'm a little bit of a pinhead here, an egghead. Call me what you want. I have one foot in the blue-collar world, one foot in the academic world, and my third foot in the spiritual world, my invisible third foot in the invisible spiritual world. I have one foot deeply rooted into the spiritual world and one in the blue-collar world and one in the egghead world. I really do. So yeah, I can saw a piece of wood. I was sawing a dowel the other day with a saw I have in my garage, and I was thinking of my father's been dead 40 years. He taught me how to saw a piece of wood. Do you realize that Obama could not saw a piece of wood? I would wager guess that 70% of those in Congress could not saw a piece of wood or turn a screw into a door without slipping and cutting their finger. I would imagine, like, let's take Barney Frank, who's no longer there. If you gave him a screwdriver and you said you have to screw that into the wall, the screwdriver would likely slip and puncture his finger, the other finger on the other hand. Or if you gave, let us say, Chuck Schumer a saw, and you said, Chuck, you have to cut that dowel with a nice even line, a finger is on the floor. He'll look like my high school geometry teacher who lost it to the IRA.
Savage.
Killing her. I'm not interested in this song. It's too old already. I don't know what it is. None of this is moving me today. Maybe I should move up to the 70s, maybe. Do we have any 70s, 80s music? I like disco music lately in the car. There's a certain lightness to it. Who's the guy with the hair plugs who got in trouble with the massage guys? I feel bad for him, true. He has so much trouble in his life. He didn't need this late in his life. What's his name? I know, I'm joking. It's my gimmick. When I play disco music in the car, I'm suddenly transformed to John Travolta as a young man in tight pants dancing. Then he was in L.A. Confidential. No, he was in a Psycho movie. The crazy, killing, disgusting. I hated that movie. I never got images out of my head from some movies. To this day, I'm disturbed by certain images I've seen in movies. I can go way back. The first horrible image in my head that I still can't erase and show you the power of movies, you'll never believe it. Samson and Delilah, victim at shore, being tormented by the midgets with the nets and the poker. Samson, look at that movie. See, it was a funny thing. Samson and Delilah, the original version, I don't know, early 50s. Victim at shore plays Samson, and he's blinded with the hot coals. They throw nets on him, and then they get the dwarfs to poke him with, I don't know, poke him with pokers, hot pokers, before he knocks down the Roman temple. That image I can't get out of my mind. Now, Victim at Shore, by today's standards, would be laughable. You know, the pecs were hanging. It was awful. The guy looked like he needed a lot of work on the upper body. But in those days, that was considered a good body. Today, if you looked at him, it would never pass. The age of the muscle man in movies didn't really originate till the 60s. Like around Schwarzenegger's time is when you first saw muscled bodies in the movies. But I'm talking the decade before that, they got away with murder. the let's say the grandfathers of a Spielberg type, this or the fathers of Spielberg, even though his father was a bomber pilot and American, a patriotic American, saying the movie father of Weinstein. Weinstein's movie father, symbolically, would have been able to book, let's say, a Jewish guy from Brooklyn as a Navajo, which they did regularly, incidentally. You look back at 50s movies of Indians, they were all Jewish guys from Brooklyn that they came out from the candy store with. They put feathers on the head. The guy's name was Mo on Eastern Parkway, suddenly became, whoo, you know, he gave him an Indian name. It was unbelievable. Good-looking guys with dark skin, they probably Sephardic Jews. I don't think they could use the Ashkenazi line. I don't think they could use the European stream as an Indian, but they did. They got a, no one seemed to know the difference. There was, it's amazing to me. There was such a lack of sophistication in the audiences, in the theaters in those days. Today they're very sophisticated. Look at the amount of filth and violence they want. They're experts at it. So we're talking about Chick-fil-A now. Well, I don't even know what they did. I have no idea why Rahm Emanuel would attack a business like this. I don't know what the controversy is about, and don't call me and tell me what it is. Don't ruin my day. I could care less. I don't care. But the guy dies of a heart attack, the PR guy? Let's play a little music. I like Little Star by The Elegants. That's Rock and Roll Sheet 3. Little Star by The Elegants. It may trigger some summer memories that have nothing to do with the depressing times that we live in. I'm playing already. I mean, there you go. It's not so hard. You press a switch and pick a number. Snowy's already in a jar. I can feel it already. It's the travel. It's the travel blues. I'm going to stop it. I don't want to bum my audience out. Look at this lunatic. Colorado shooting suspect was a psychiatric patient. You hear? She did him a lot of good. Oh, that's a great argument for therapy. Oh, yeah. No, isn't that a great argument for therapy and therapists? Yeah, he was seeing a shrink, and he did it anyway. Unbelievable to me. Let the games begin. Follow it live. I'm not going to, I don't, maybe in passing. Blind archer post-world record. How does that work? How does a blind archer, that would be like a mute talk show host, wins the a Marconi Award. How could, let us say a mute talk show host wins a Marconi Award. How is that possible? I don't even understand this. How could you be a blind archer? What if I get on an airline plane and the guy says, "Welcome to American Airlines. We would like to let you know that we have the first blind pilot in America flying your plane today because we are an inclusive company." Would you stay on an airplane like that? Blindness is a horrible, terrible thing. But would you want to fly a plane? If you, I don't follow this, what the world we're living in. Where is this going? How does this end? How does this tolerance and inclusiveness end? Where does it end up? Attacking a chicken company because the guy said something? Play Little Star again for a minute. I want to see if it triggers anything positive in me. I don't know if I can talk about Chick-fil-A. No one knows this song. Nah, turn it off. It's no, that's not provoking the right emotion. Maudlin, maudlin. I need an upbeat rock and roll song. I can feel already. It's. Go, I'm go. Thinking about. What's this now? That's too raucous for the mood I'm in. That's on the other side, a little too. I can feel I'm in the lag phase of the sine curve. I'm in a depressed mood because I'm traveling the dog. I can see what it is. It's not leaving the pants in the closet. That's sort of a symbol. It's leaving my dog. I don't want to leave him. I want him to come with me, but I'm told it's too hot there from his fur. He won't do well. You won't be able to go in the pool. The dog has a tick. He has OCD. If I swim in a pool, he wants to jump in. I can say, so what's wrong with letting him jump in a pool? Nothing. Here's the problem. He drinks the water, and he gets sick from the chlorine. Then I have to put up with the diarrhea, so you don't know what to do with him. If I swim, he wants to swim. Okay, given that's okay. I don't mind. But he drinks the water while he swims, and I try to stop him. He doesn't understand it. He's smart. Poodles are very smart. A poodle is smarter than the average Democrat voter. There's no question about it. I would say my dog has a higher IQ than the average Democrat voter in the state of California. A bankrupt state, and they vote for Jerry Brown, who puts in a railroad to nowhere. That's going to bankrupt the state even further. That's Democrats at work. But the poodle, as intelligent as it is still a dog, right? He can't help himself. You talk to him, you think he understands you. Oh, yeah, right. They're not a human. They make believe they understand. They're such con men dogs. That's why I love them. You talk, they listen. Mm-hmm, yeah, I get it. They're like a therapist. They have about as much effect as the Colorado shooting suspect psychiatrist does did on him as they do on you. You know, there's an understanding. They fake it. Like most therapists are so bored of patients. They don't listen to them. And what does that tell you about yourself? It's like billable hours to a lawyer. So it's like a dog. Oh, and they look at you, the eyes, and but they don't know what you're saying. They have no idea. They're looking at you and just mirroring back your face. So therefore, you could give it a bath. It smells fluffy and like it's a human, right? You take it for a walk. It rubs in the pee 2 seconds later and smells. It's still a dog. No matter what you say to it, Teddy, look, let's have a. You're 8 years old. I can't take this bathing you every time you go out. Can't you just lift your leg on a bush and walk away like a normal dog? You go out right away, he's rubbing in the hedge, rubbing in the other dogs. Why are you doing this? He looks at me like I'm crazy for even asking it. He's a dog. That's what dogs do. He rubs against the bushes. No matter what I say to him, he'll rub in the bush and destroy the wash job I just gave him. Now, come on, he smells. I have to wash him again. I can't stand it. So I'd rather not take him out. I let him go in his own backyard. Then you clean it up. That's the. But what I'm getting at is they don't really understand much of what you say. It's all intuition and acting. They're like little parrots. So as I'm saying to you, he jumps in a swimming pool. And no matter what you say to him, no matter how smart he looks, he's going to drink the water and vomit from the chlorine in it. You can't break him of it. So that's one thing. Then number two, let's say I'm going to go in the ocean and go surfing again, which I did last time. Remember how good it was for me? Remember I broke through? It was like a whole big thing. Learned to surf at my age. I don't mean like professional. I'm saying I got up on the board, you know, was in the warm water. The dog, what am I going to do with him while I'm in the ocean? He's going to go on the surfboard with me. I'm going to get him a pair of glasses and a wetsuit. At first, it was very hot. The ocean water is 87 degrees or 86, which is astounding. That I can't wait for. My luck, a manatee will swim by, attract the shark. It'll take off a leg. There's a lot of sharks in the Floridian waters. You're not somehow in the. So that's why a lot of people like swimming pools. That's another set of problems. I like to swim at dawn alone in a pool. So you're alone in a pool at dawn. What if you have a heart attack? You say to yourself, no, you do think of these things. I do. I mean, it enters my mind. Let's say I go in the pool alone. No one's at the pool. No video camera, no video surveillance. And I have a heart attack at 6 o'clock in the morning. She comes out. She finds a floating 170-pound whitefish in the pool. What is she going to do? It's the aftermath. I don't want to be left in the pool. So on the other hand, then the dog should be with me at dawn. In case I do stroke out, he goes running in the house. He's dead in the pool. Come on out, quick. You think it's like in the movies. He's going to grab me by the collar, pull me out, and give me a CPR. He's going to run to a fireman. Hey, come to the roof, roof. Come to the pool. He's like, roof. Poodle save Sam. Poodle save Sam. You could see what I do with myself. I have too much time on my hands. It's why I've taken to writing novels. No, you got to write something to get it out of your head. Otherwise, you wind up like the guy with the hair, the dyed hair. No, if you don't have outlets you know what I'm saying? If you don't have outlets, you wind up with the red hair. You wind up going postal. You got to let it out of you somehow, don't you? No one's listening already. The same thing, a chicken fillet this, chicken fillet. What's Romney doing in the Olympics? Why is he there? Why is he even there with the Limeys? What did he go there for? Why did he go there and get set up with that two-faced Cameron, that false conservative? He was supposed to take me off the list of murderers and terrorists. He lied. Oh, a politician lied? Shocking. Just shocking. What's going to happen when Romney becomes president? You think he'll take me off the list? Oh, I better start being nice to him. Yeah, right. He'll take me off the list. Yeah. Well, who wants to go to England anyway? I'm going to go to Ireland when everything's said and done. I'm going to take a tour group to Ireland. We're going to go to the border of England. In Ireland, we're going to jeer the British with the most anti-British slogans imaginable. I'll have more fun with the Irish than with the English anyway. That's the end of it. The Irish didn't put me on a list, did they? No. I always get along with the Irish. I don't care what their politics are. For something, there's something melancholic about Irish people that I like. I don't like overtly cheerful people. I don't trust them. I mean, there's something to be said for confidence, yes. But on the other hand, this constant how to win friends and influence people with smiles and, you know, utter confidence, I don't buy it. I'm sorry. But the Irish are always perennially, under the surface, miserably sad. Some 1,000 years of oppression. That I can relate to. What's already time? We're hitting a shot? Well, we have questions out there. It's open mic to mic. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you're still listening to me, then you're in bad shape. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I guess everyone's watching the Olympics. I mean, I got a full board, but I can tell by the energy that it's a different crowd. So what, my audience is sports fanatics? They want to watch the blind archer? I don't get it. The pageantry, why'd they fire that girl from Greece? She said something about West Nile virus. I don't even know what it was. That's the world I'm living in? Every word now you get fired or crucified? That's freedom of speech. That's what your ancestors died for. Every word out of everyone's mouth is someone's going to sue you. I go on my cell phone, apps. I hit the wrong button. It goes to apps. I was born in a pre-apps age. I don't even know what an app is to me. If I saw the word APP, it meant someone had appendicitis. I was afraid they were going to die of an infection. So app meant appendix. Now app, I don't even know what. So many apps. Buy the app. App this. Select the community. I have a primitive phone. I have a Samsung. I hide it. I don't have an iPhone. I don't like moving my finger around. Looks like it's... I have a Samsung Rugby. Old-fashioned, very rugged. You could drop it. It bounces. Numbers. I put it because the numbers are big. I like you could take pictures with it. I've taken pictures. So durable AT&T Rugby. AT&T Samsung Rugby phone, but I pull it out. Youngsters snicker at me. Look at him. They're so sophisticated with their moving their finger around. A word they can't write. A full sentence, illiterate sentence they can't write. A book they've never written, let alone a letter. They text each other. They can't write a letter. It's like they can move their body on a dance floor, but they can't dance. You know what I mean? Same thing. Holding a girl, forget about it. Dancing across from a girl, yes. May as well dance with a chair in the room. What's the point of dancing? Whatever. Where are we? I got callers. Brian in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. Nice to talk to you again. I'm a loyal listener and building your Portland Savage Nation. Enjoy your humor and logic. I have a
lot. Well, it used to be known as the wit and wisdom of Michael Savage in this case. In other words, I can be very wise and I can be very witty, or I can be very boring at times. I understand that. Do you think today I'm being witty, wise, or boring?
I'd say witty and wise.
Oh, thank God. I skipped the beat. You took a little while to answer that one. I'm a little worried. No, I swear. It was like a pause. If it was instantly, oh, Mike, it was witty, okay. But no, it was, I think witty. Okay, that's not bad. That could be a joke within a joke. BJ in New York on WOR. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation on this beautiful Friday.
Dr. Savage, the simple pleasures are the best way to go, and that's been the hallmark of your life. And the Irish people would welcome you with open arms because they don't care much for subjugation or royalty.
Thank you. That's exactly right. They made me into an honorary Irishman of the 1912 period. You know that the Brits have made me into the equivalent of an Irish citizen in the period about 1912.
Michael Collins, now we have Michael Savage.
That's right. You know what? That's not a bad idea. Maybe I'll go to Ireland. I once almost moved there, by the way. I almost emigrated to Ireland. Would you believe it? About 30 years ago, I was going through a phase of I can't live in this country anymore, not with the leftists, what they're doing to this country. And I thought of moving to Ireland, but it was just too complex. I thought of getting like a thatched house, living out in the countryside. What it really was, I heard that they treated writers very well. It would have been a disastrous mistake for me in retrospect. I'm glad I didn't go. I was going to live the writer's life out in the woods. It wouldn't have worked at all. I wouldn't have fit in. I know I wouldn't have fit in. I would have had some friends, you know, the drinking buddies in the pubs. I'd weigh about 197 pounds, at least, maybe 220, maybe a 210-er. Right now, I'm still in, you know, livable shape. But the beer, I'm back on wine again. I'm starting to drink wine. I could drink wine into summer. I'm drinking an Alsatian white wine. It's unbelievable. Cheap, but good. I got it from my friend up in Chalet Basque. I first tasted it up there, and I didn't get a headache. Imagine that I've reached a point in life where everything has to be like, does it cause a like an aversion reaction? Isn't it sickening? I used to drink wine by the bottle. Never bothered me. Then I reached a point where a sip, ugh, every sip my head would, so I was like reduced to drinking a beer or a vodka because it didn't affect me because vodka is the purest of drinks of alcohol, you know, and then the beer, if you know, the German beers are the best. And that was it. And I couldn't drink wine. But now I'm drinking wine. It was much, much different high. Couple of glasses of wine, totally different. We should talk about alcohol on Friday, what kind of alcohol and what it does for you. It's absolutely not the same. Look, you drink lab alcohol, you're going to get one buzz. You drink beer, you're going to get another. Let's say in the same amount of alcohol, you drink wine, you're going to get yet another. It's the congeners in the other the other drinks, what they do to you. No wonder people, they swirl it. They look at it, they're just drunks. I love guys sitting around and they swirl. What are they swirling? They have to show off with a glass of wine. Who are they fooling? They just want to drink it and get wasted. Ex-Wall Streeter took cyanide after the guilty verdict. You see, it fits right into the show. Remember the former Wall Street trader who collapsed in court after being found guilty of arson? Remember they put something in his mouth? They found that it was cyanide. Unbelievable. Orangutan sent to island to kick smoking habit. Oh, come on. That's not... Really? I always had a soft spot for orangutans. They're red. You know their red fur? I'm starting to think about it. You got to be careful. Get an attack orangutan in this country. You don't know what's liable to happen. What if you have a pet orangutan and it runs amok in the street? It's a bad thing for redheads, what went on. Even though it was a dye job? Terrible. No, it's a horrible thing. Everyone's going to be afraid of anyone with red hair now. I bet your red hair suddenly, I mean, in dyed red hair, suddenly dyes as a color. Clairol, that's it. That color's out. That's it. Unless Madonna wants to dye her entire body red.
Seven.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. And God knows what we're talking about. Anything but the Olympics. Within 2 weeks, we'll be gagging on the Olympics feed. That's to get our mind off Obama's failures, the collapsed economy, the terrorists who have visited the White House, the scandal, Solyndra, the lack of investigation of John Corzine, tied to the Justice Department. Endless. So what could be better for Obama than the Olympics? What Romney is doing there, I have no idea. He should be here reminding us how bad it is instead of going there. I don't get it. But then he ran the Olympics, and it's something to do. It's good for him. I'd rather he stayed here. And I'm into a pessimistic mood, really. So I'd rather not talk about the Olympics, truthfully. I mean, look what the sewer pipe of Hollywood has done to this country, and we forgot it already. A week later, gone. You forgot already about the slaughter in the movie theater. It's up to like a Javelin, you know, Frankie Javelin. Pessimism never won any battles, said Dwight D. Eisenhower. Yes, that is true. That is true for Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was a warrior and a general. But what if you're an ordinary person? You can't be a pessimist? What's wrong with it? Arnold Bennett, a Victorian-era British author, said pessimism, when you get used to it, is just as agreeable as optimism. And I'll say something else for pessimism. If you're pessimistic long enough, you'll never be disappointed. That's a Savage original. Putting me into the lexicon on pessimism. Michael Savage, the great American author and commentator, said, that if you're pessimistic long enough, you will never be disappointed. That's pretty good. I have a very dark sense of humor, to be honest with you. But it's worked for me my whole life. It has worked for me my entire life. The dark sense of humor that I have has gotten me through virtually everything so far. I can't have a false optimism like the how to win friends and influence people, which is, by the way, it is American. How to win friends and influence people. When I first heard that philosophy somewhere after my sufferings of young Werther phase, like 18, 19, it was so alien to me. I felt like I was from another planet. I tried to twist my brain into being optimistic, but I didn't know how to do it. I had no concept of how to be an optimist. I don't know how to be an optimist. Look at me. Listen to what I'm saying to you. I don't know if you're interested in this, but it's a very interesting topic. Pessimism is an equally valid way to get through life as is just as valid as optimism, right? And yet it's considered almost un-American or anti-American to be pessimistic. I know it is. Oh, look, he's too pessimistic. So? And? What's the difference? Some of the greatest poetry and music, you know, it reflects pessimism, melancholia. I can tell you right now, you listen to any piano concerto of another period, it's all pessimistic music. On the verge of suicide, every piano concerto was written by some genius composer who was this far away from knocking himself off. But he tore his heart out in composing the piano concerto. Very little of it is uplifting. Yeah, maybe he'll go into a few uplifting sections of his composition. So what do you want to talk about? Optimism, pessimism? I would say that most people listen to talk radio are pessimists. That would be my guess. Mixed in would be some of the people who are lifetime optimists. God bless them how they do it. I don't know what it is. You have to always have a positive attitude, keep your head up. It works. I remember actually when I think about it, I was going through this phase a long time ago when I read a book by an optimist, a whole workbook that had all sorts of programs in the Bay Area on how to make you think differently and positively. It was so alien to me. But people at work, coworkers, had the books. And one of the statements, and it made sense, in order for an airplane to fly, the attitude of the plane has to be kept up. That got me through the University of California at Berkeley, the last year, the hardest year of my life. What I'm going through now is nothing compared to my PhD program. But I didn't run through a movie theater with a gun. I finished it out and got my PhD from Berkeley. I got it in 2.3 years, world record. You know, I don't know if anyone's got a PhD faster than I do from that great university. I came there with two master's degrees and six books to my name, two children, working a job, and I still got a PhD in 2.7 years. Would you believe it? 3.95 index out of a 4.0. You don't read about that because, oh, Michael Savage, Well, the fact is that I remember I had a job during that phase, too. I was working at some job, and the guy had the book where it said, an airplane, in order for it to maintain altitude, must keep its attitude up, meaning the nose had to be up in order to gather the wind. And it's the same with the person. So from that point on, I picked up a little optimism to fly through the program. It was really hard for me and bad. It was the worst. You know, the worst day of my life was in that PhD program. What I'm going through now is nothing compared to that. Never. I thought I would never make it through. You want to hear what pessimism? You want to hear depression? You know, I'm bringing it up because this guy was a PhD in neurosciences. He tried to get in the program. He lasted a semester or a year and dropped out because it's probably a real PhD in a real science is as tough a thing as you can get. As you can go through. But I've always loved the challenge, and I've always, you know, picked challenges that I could reasonably expect to succeed at. And I wanted a PhD more than anything on the earth at the time. It was the number one thing in my life. It wasn't because I was told it was a union card and it would get me a teaching position, which I wanted very badly. It wasn't just that. It was the honor of a real PhD. I wanted it more than anything I had ever wanted in my life, right? So I was willing to do anything for it. Well, I had reached the point of the end of the road with, I think it was oral exams were coming up. You don't know what an oral exam is. It's as tough as anything you can go. Maybe a kid going through a parole hearing would understand what an oral exam is because it was like being in a parole hearing. You have like a panel of your three professors and you have to defend your thesis and you really have to know your stuff because they're going to cut you to ribbons if you are at a real university in a real science. Very tough. I remember feeling so low. This is hard to describe. I was sitting in the men's room, where men sit in men's rooms. I felt as though I had disappeared within my body and had fallen into the toilet. I know you can laugh at it. It sounds humorous, but it wasn't. It was almost a semi-psychotic state of exhaustion. Exhaustion, exhaustion, exhaustion. That's what happened to me. So I almost could see what happened to this kid. He cracked up. But you see, his problem was he didn't even stay in there and fight it out. He was on drugs. He was obviously on medication that the crackpot shrink gave him, which put him into a state of psychosis. I didn't take medication. I used all of the techniques that I still use, frankly, to get through those periods, including religion. It's when I think I went into my very heavy God phase. The heavy God phase came after I got my PhD, and 65 universities rejected me because I was white and bright. They said, white, bright men need not apply. Don't even send us another one. Almost a 4.0 index, great PhD, published at a major university. They didn't want to hire me because I was a white male. They were hiring, as you well know, anyone but white males at that time if they could. So I went into a very bad state, and I had to find the strength within to survive. Two young children, didn't know where the next dollar was going to come from, didn't know what to do with myself, all because the ACLU said some people in our society will have to put their lives on hold. And I was that person. Very personal story. So I got deeply into the religious at that time. I can't say I found God because God never left me. I mean, I left God. You understand how that works? See, I didn't think I'd get into God talk, but here we are. God never left me. I turned my back on God. He never went anywhere. He was there all the time. I found a way back to tapping into that energy source, if you want to put it into a strict physical sense. Anyone who's into the physical sciences understand God in different terms than I do. Einstein, one of the world's greatest physicists, said that the longer he studied the perimeters of the universe, the more he came to realize there had to be a creator, God. You will never read that in your university books today because they don't want you to think that Einstein was a God-believing man. They want you to think he was a wild atheist who stuck his tongue out so that you can, you know, use drugs and become a sexual degenerate and get your PhD from Harvard in degeneracy. Nevertheless, the point is that I did discover, again, some very deep powers. And I have to say right now I'm out of that phase. To my detriment, maybe I have to do it again. There are methods, there are techniques to find God. It's not easy, by the way, to talk to God. You may say it is, it isn't. It is very difficult to communicate with God. There are those who believe, oh, yeah, you just got to accept God. He's there. Turn around. Wrong. Wrong. You could do the mumbo jumbo version of it. Yeah, and you can go through the sitting in the pew and mumbling and reading the book. And you're not going to feel a thing. And that's why many of you go in and come out and say, who needs it? There's nothing there. You listen to another boring sermon. You don't feel God. You look at the stained glass. You look at the cross and you feel nothing. Or if you're Jewish, you go in and you hear the mumbo jumbo in Hebrew. You don't understand a word that they're saying. Or if it's in English, it's even worse. You know, the Reformed synagogues look like churches without crosses to most Jews. They don't know what to make of it. They come out with no uplifting of their spirit. It's very hard to see God. It's not easy. You know, don't fool yourself. All these books that tell you, oh yeah, God's waiting for you. He may be, but he's not an easy guy to reach. You know, he's really busy. He's got a lot of things to do, and it's not easy to get through to him. You really got to know his number one. You got to know what number to call, exactly how to dial it, and you got to make sure he's in when you ring him. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are talking about pessimism on the Savage Nation, so I'm going to give you some quotes on pessimism. Maybe you're an optimist. I know it's a shock to hear the word pessimism. It's probably some kind of crime against bullying or something. I don't know if you're allowed to say you're a pessimist. It could be anti-American. But the thing is, some brilliant people have written some great things. Here's Mark Twain who said, "The man who is a pessimist before age 48 knows too much. If he is an optimist after it, he knows too little." Robert Oppenheimer, you know, the father of the H-bomb, he said, The optimist thinks that this is the best of all possible worlds. The pessimist knows it. That's interesting. Now, Arthur Schopenhauer is my kind of philosopher. Listen to this one. It takes a little thinking. "There is not much to be got anywhere in the world. It is filled with misery and pain. If a man escapes these, boredom lies in wait for him at every corner. More even, it is evil which generally has the upper hand, and folly that makes the most noise. Fate is cruel and mankind pitiable. Arthur Schopenhauer. Now, Fyodor Dostoevsky, for those of you who remember him, I doubt that you remember him in this day and age where people Twitter. I grew up on Tolstoy. I steeped myself in Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. But Dostoevsky, one of the great Russian writers, wrote, "I renounce the higher harmony altogether. It's not worth the tears of that one tortured child who prayed with unexpiated tears to dear, kind God." Very, very, very interesting. I know a lot of people feel that way. How can there be a God when a child is being tortured? How can there be a God when that lunatic ran amok in the movie theater? Well, my only answer to it is that God is not omnipotent. God is omnipresent. We've had this discussion before. Because if you don't accept, if you can't balance that out, then there's no point in believing in anything. You have to believe that there's a God in heaven, but he doesn't control your free will. You have free will. The lunatic has free will to be a lunatic and kill people. You know, when you read that in the adjacent theater, a guy was sitting in an adjacent theater and a stray bullet went through the wall and hit the guy in the neck. What does that tell you? That tells you chance, right? That's like sitting in your house and an airplane engine falls through your roof and kills you. It's like, how do you get up in the morning with a thing like that? Well, that's who lives like that? I don't live with that kind of things in my mind, you know. I mean, I do believe that there's some kind of balance in nature. I'll give you an example. I'm a nature lover. I'm very kind to animals. But I have a problem. I have seagulls on my roof, and they've had seagull eggs that hatched into seagull babies. They're driving me insane. 4 in the morning, and they're crapping everywhere. I can't stand it anymore. I used to give them a bagel. Look what they became. So there's too many of them. I don't know what to do. So I got a bunch of pebbles on my deck. And this morning, finally, I threw one at the big seagull. It was on my chimney. I didn't hit it. I threw it near it. And it flew away. Didn't like it. I saw it looked at me with anger. Like, oh, okay, I'll show you. About a half hour later, I'm slicing a bagel with a brand new bread knife. I cut my finger again. The same Nazi knife did it again. Remember I bought that new bread knife last week and I cut my hand in the store? Again, I cut now another finger with it. I couldn't stop the bleeding for 2 hours. But the point is, look at the cut now. It's healed up. I said, wait a minute. Maybe God said to you, stop throwing pebbles at seagulls. I don't know. Who knows? Call PETA on me. What do you want from me? Okay, leave me alone already. And then get into their Lexus and drive to an anti-American meeting. What do you want to talk about? There's loads of good callers. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I have a full board. I knew any topic that's really exciting to me is exciting to you. Any news? The Olympic flag is being carried by UN Chief Ban Ki-moon. Is that on the Drudge Report? Ban Ki-moon. So what's wrong with that? I don't get it. The UN flag. Oh, I see. Not the British flag. Ban Ki-moon. Olympics open updates. Greece looked to leave woes behind. Israeli team says Lebanese judo fighters refuse to train next to them. Of course, because the Lebanese are afraid of the Israelis. Don't they believe that the Lebanese are doing it because they have a higher road? They're scared of that in their minds. The Israelis will whip the floor up with them. If I were the Olympics, you know what I'd do? I would say, you lost the match, Lebanese. Go back to your hellhole. That's all. You don't want to be next to the Jews? You lose. You're just afraid to fight them. That's all. Treating the Israelis like they're Nazis. It's unbelievable. The world's upside down. Nazi countries are treating the Jews like they're the Nazis. This is because of Obama. He lets them get away with it because he shows no spine in standing up to the Islamofascism that's taking over this world. You want to know why I'm pessimistic? I know a guy who's older than me who's extremely successful, very optimistic. He's more depressed than I've ever seen him in his life, and it's all because of Obama, politics, and what's going on in the world. He's very, very sad for America to see this fraudster in the White House so long and getting away with it. He's extremely sad. What do you want to talk about? Something positive? Chick-fil-A? Chick-fil-A can't stand the Olympics. How about Olympics? You watching them? Motivational book? Pessimism? Oh! My event, September 22nd. I have updates on that. Anyone want to go to that? You going to my event? Better than the Olympics. September 22nd, Marin Center.
Savage.
torch, the torch, the torch, the torch, the torch, the queen, the torch, the Olympics, the torch. It looks like Leni Riefenstahl's 1936 Olympics. Was it 36 or 38, Beowulf? 36. Yeah, very imperial. The Imperial Olympics. Let the games begin. I'm not interested in it. Are you watching this now? It's not on yet, right? Till on the East Coast, it's on now, isn't it? I think it just went on the East Coast. The flame. How many Olympics can you watch till you get bored of it? How many shows can you, how can you watch the same thing over and over again? Yes, they're young, they're handsome, they're strong, they're skilled, and you don't have enough of that garbage here with baseball and football and basketball and hockey. How much can you take of this worship of the body? Where is an Olympics for the brain? Where is an Olympics for the mind? I don't see it. Like a nation of beasts. I don't know what this must be like to some super religious person. To me, it looks like idolatry. I'm not a very religious person. It looks like international idolatry, the whole thing. I know it's strange. I haven't read that anywhere. I'm not into like a fanatic religious viewpoint, but it's like a world of idolatry, worshiping the maimon of the Olympic advertiser, worshiping a bottle of soda. Olympic flag being carried by UN Chief Ban Ki-moon. Unbelievable. Olympic flag being carried by UN Chief Ban Ki-moon. Like nonsense. The whole thing crazy. But okay, I'm not like an average person. Middle of the world's burning. The world's going to pieces. Syria, murder, mayhem. No one knows that if you take the side of those being massacred, right, by the crazed leader, you're going to stir up a firestorm that you can never believe. The people who hate you more are the ones he's trying to repress. The people who would take the gas and use it against you are the ones he's trying to repress. And you can't understand that because he's so horrible to them. The whole thing makes no sense. No one knows what to make of it. Look at this on Drudge Report. Gorilla in zoo hangs himself. I wasn't depressed enough. I have to read this. That's impossible. A gorilla can't hang himself. Oh, hang accidentally. Thank God. Accidentally hanging himself with a climbing rope. I couldn't believe a gorilla would do that. Animals don't commit suicide. I mean, they do, actually. Animals do commit suicide, like the killer whales that wash up on shore. Another gorilla calm appeared to be trying to help Tatu when zookeepers arrived, but it's hard to say what exactly she was doing. Oh, this is awful. I know why I'm depressed today. I really do. I can't mention names. It would be an insult to the family. But a guy I know for 40 years through a restaurant, I found out he had cancer last night. I got so sick. It was awful. One of the strongest men I ever met in my life. I mean, spiritually, you talk about a positive person, powerful physically, powerful, wonderful guy, great restaurant. And I find out last night he's been fighting lymphoma. I got so depressed. I couldn't sleep all night. You know, he's a bit younger than I. I don't know how many years, but you say to yourself, look what awaits people. Look what awaits you around the corner. And it does, you know, it's hard to push it aside. I'm sorry. I know this is a national radio show. I'm supposed to be optimistic and talk about politics. And I can't do that right now. I don't know why. It's the Olympics are depressing me. This like rah-rah, sis-boom-ba. It's like a national, it's like an international high school game. It's the same as in high school. I didn't go to the basketball games in high school. I was like the odd kid. Those who did, I didn't put them down. I didn't think there was anything wrong with them. I myself couldn't sit through a basketball game. There was something about the squeaking shoes and the sweat could come flying off people into the stands. I didn't like it. It was like in Jamaica High School gym, sweat flew in and the squeaking of the sneaker and everyone got so excited. I didn't understand why. Pom-pom girls and mad smiles. It was like Manchurian Candidate before the movie was made. I think I'm writing like a fiction piece on the air right now. I really am. Are there any pessimists out there who are enjoying today's show that would make you not pessimistic? See, that's the problem. If you're a pessimist, you're probably enjoying the show, which means I'm making you feel good, which is not a good thing for you. You're liable to blow your philosophy. All right, let's take a caller out of the pack and see what happens. And it's also because I'm traveling and the thought of leaving my pants. Remember I told you that earlier? I'm traveling, so I have to go through every closet now. All these pants are sitting there. I have to select only a few and leave the others behind, the shirts, the belts, the ties, which I never wear anyway. But the thought of not taking them with me bothers me. Selecting, which shoes to take, which personal effects to leave behind and whatnot, then the dog can't come. It's too hot for him in Florida. So I got to leave him. And the thought of not having him at night, playing with him, talking to him. I mean, I drive with the dog. The guy's in my car with me all the time. I'm never lonely with the dog next to me. I swear to God, I'm never alone. Like, he does such cute things on my little... Like, if I go fast, which I do very often in my big S600, I call it Wilhelm, this powerful monster car. I love when he leans back against the front seat. He sits in the right seat, and he sees if I'm going to... Like, I get mad at someone on the highway, I want to go around them, or I'm on a curvy road, and I'm speeding, whatever. He balances himself up against the seat, like with one leg. He pushes back. He leans back. It's such a cute thing to have a dog that you love. Really, it is. It's amazing. And then you start talking to him, and he looks at you. Yeah, look, I know. You start to think he actually knows what you're saying. Nah, look, it's bad. I understand. Don't worry. But he has emotions. Like if I pull up to a certain house that I go to, and we're going to see people we love, he starts to kiss me in the ear. He gets excited. He kisses me in my right ear, and he's normally very aloof. Other dogs, if you ask them to do something, idiots with their tongues hanging out. You ask a golden retriever to do anything, it's like, anything you want. You know, but you ask a poodle, it's like, I don't know, I'll think about it, I'll get back to you. I'm not too sure, I'm busy right now. They're very aloof creatures, in another world. He's sort of like that, but he's a toy poodle, so he's not totally like that, because if he gets me mad, I pick him up like a pocketbook. He's not like 120, he's not like an 85-pound poodle. If he gets me mad and I ask him a question, he doesn't answer me fast enough, I pick him up like a pocketbook and carry him. That's the end of it. All right, let's just go. It's not like you want to go. It's like people who raise their children wrong. You ever see him talk to a three-year-old? Bobby, would you like the soy milk or would you like the carrot frappe? The kid looks at him like he's crazy. They think the child understands most. It doesn't understand. Or the people in restaurants who bring coloring books. I leave. I move tables or I leave the restaurant. I pay the check and go. I cannot eat dinner next to a child coloring. I don't go to a restaurant for ding-dong school. I am sorry. And I had children young. There's a limit. I had a friend at those times. I dumped him a long time ago. He became a pot-headed doctor. Never saw him again. He went into medicine to steal the medicine out of the cabinets. Never heard from him again. I wish him well. I don't know what he looks like. He probably looks like Methuselah from all the drugs he stole out of the clinic. He took his child when they were young to a restaurant, and she would change a diaper. While you're eating dinner, I swear to God, she'd put the child on the table, open up the diaper, make you look at it and change it. Hippies from Berkeley they were at the time. I hear they're big Obama supporters today. I swear to God, absolutely true. A diaper they would change on a table. Could you put up with this? So you go to a restaurant, and there's a lot of older guys with young babies. I understand that. I could understand it because it's an, what's with the training in a restaurant? I love the ones who try to show you how smart their child is. You're trying to have a romantic dinner or even just get through it without gagging. Never mind romantic. How about one meal without somebody driving you insane by talking about politics or screaming after a glass of wine? The women get gassed up in Marin County. I don't know what they're on. It's like laughing gas. One glass of wine, they're already gassed out of their mind, and they start screeching. You can't believe it. You can't eat. It's like chalk on a blackboard. I order the check. I'm out of there. Pack it up. Put it in the box. I'm going home. That's it. I'm gone. If you get too loud a group, two glasses of white wine, bad cheap white wine, $12 a glass, and they're already flying high. You mix that with whatever the doctor put them on, and you're out of control. I mean, that's the thing. Now you mix that, it's unbelievable. What a mixture. But the worst thing of a restaurant for me, the worst, is the trainers, the child educators in the restaurant. Everyone tries to show you how smart their child is, and they have history lessons in the restaurant. And so, Billy, pick up a topic, anything like, when exactly in the year 1776 did George Washington, and the kid answers him, like a whole question and answer, they have questions for the child over dinner. You're trying to dine in an adult restaurant. Now, of course, they can't ban children from restaurants. They get a lawsuit. I understand that. It's a very sensitive issue. Can they not have a special time for adults, let's say over the age of 40, where children, or put them in a separate room? Or is that like against children? Why must you mix? You can't mix certain age groups. It's impossible. You cannot. It's just a different world. It's a different speed. You don't want to hear about George Washington crossing the Delaware or what year the Constitution was written in. or anything of that nature. When was the Grand Coulee Dam built, Bob? And the kid knows the answer.
The Grand Coulee Dam was built.
And you have to listen to this. It's awful. I sound like they sound like Bonnie Frank on Laughing Gas, most children. I don't want to listen to them. Is anyone enjoying this show? I'm actually strictly out. I'm outgassing today. I feel like I'm outgassing the pessimism and depression of my friend getting cancer. He had it for 4 months. I didn't know it. His wife said to me, did you know he had it for 4 months? He'd been struggling with lymphoma. I said, oh, God, I can't. I can't believe this. Of all the people on earth, I never would have thought this guy would get sick like that. Never. You know how you look at people and you figure, oh, they're strong. They're gonna. You can't predict what anyone's going to get. Cancer is not very selective, by the way. Kind of like the Grim Reaper, you know, when he walks down the planet. It's like one out of four gets struck. You know, no matter what you do, everything's going to live forever. Because they eat veg, ovo-lacto, lacto-ovo, schmovo, spring water. Their health is generally not better. Absolutely not. I'm not saying you should, you know, roll in saturated fats. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you can do certain things. I don't smoke, for example. Smoke is probably the worst thing you could do. Of all the things I would pick would be, one, working in an asbestos factory, two, smoking, marijuana or cigarettes, same thing. The carcinogens in marijuana are at a higher level than that in tobacco. But don't tell your daughter that, because she knows more than everybody. She's home for the summer. They're all over the place, too. I can't wait till the summer's over. It's full of college girls who drive bizarrely. Have you noticed that? They think that the whole world is a campus. They cut you off. They're on apps. They're doing apps, cutting from the right lane, left lane. It's like they think they're walking around a campus somewhere, and they're allowed to do anything, that there's no rules. I love the walkers and the jaywalking in San Francisco. Nobody in San Francisco thinks that they should stop for a walk and let a car go by. They have an attitude. The jaywalkers, I don't mind a crosswalk. I'll stop for them. You get the diagonal walkers, though. They want the entire sidewalk. Is anyone listening to this program? Women would like some of this. The depressed women would like it. April in Delaware, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, yeah, I'm enjoying your program, and like you, I think the Olympics are boring. I think the only part of the Olympics that I've ever liked is, like, maybe the ice skating, but then what makes it a little more exciting is when somebody falls on their butt, you know?
Yes. But, no, well, that's true. That's very human. That's a human reaction. You're watching to see if they can get away with it for how long. What age bracket are you in, April?
Huh? You never ask a lady her age.
Okay, are you in the 20 to 30 range?
A little bit above 30, just slightly above.
Yeah, no, because you have a young woman's voice. And you're not. Right. The reason I'm asking is because normally you should be gung-ho for the Olympics.
No, I'm only 32.
Yeah, but you should absolutely be gung-ho for the Olympics. You should be wearing a baseball cap with a ponytail coming out of the back, cheering it on if you're a real American girl. You should be at a beer bus tonight with your buddies. You should be on a beach barbecuing and watching it on a portable television. You know, like, Ozzy and Harriet, here we go. Chick-fil-A again. I can't get them off the board. I started with Chick-fil-A. Half the board's Chick-fil-A. We covered it already. We covered it. Rahm Emanuel should be ashamed of himself for picking on a company. Again, the Olympics. Oh, this is going to go on, my God. This is going to go on now. How long, Beowulf, how long does this go on for? Oh, God, it's only 2 weeks? I only have to hide until the middle of August and it's over? Oh, thank God. Well, that's good. Maybe I could pull my television cable out of the wall for those 2 weeks. Look at this news. Look at this. CNN president resigns. They got rid of the bum. Resigns. They threw the bum out. I mean, the ratings were in the garbage can. Why? Why? President Jim Walton, who has been with CNN for 30 years, has announced that he's resigning. He's resigning. No kidding. I love it. Listen, CNN needs new thinking, Walton wrote. He said, I have interests to explore. I need to give myself time to do them. Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, his interest to explore. Right. That's exactly why he left. Interested. He wants to spend more time with his family, no doubt. They always want to spend more time with their family when they get fired. The family could do without him. Who's I spoke to, a guy last week? I don't know, an older guy. He said he retired once. No, here's what it is. It was a guy whose father lived to 96. So he said to me, his father retired at 72 for one day. And he spent time around the house driving his mother insane. She told him if he didn't go back to work, she'd leave him. Because she couldn't take one more minute of him organizing drawers. The guy was home organizing the forks, the knives, the underwear, the notes he was looking. She said, you go back to work. Yeah, he can't wait to spend more time with his family. I guarantee the family does not want to spend more time with him. That's my guess. Is anyone enjoying this show? 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All the stories have been told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to...
Yeah, here we are living with liberal fascism everywhere you turn. The left's hatred for Christians, the smear campaign against Christian-owned Chick-fil-A sets a new low. Acting more like Benito Mussolini than Paul Revere, Boston Mayor Thomas M. Menino said he will block Chick-fil-A from opening a restaurant in his city. Why? What has this evil company done? Well, they support the Boy Scouts. They never said one word about gay marriage. They said nothing about gay marriage. But Mr. Cathy, son of the chain's founder, gave an interview that ran in the Baptist Press on July 16th. And Mr. Cathy noted that Chick-fil-A's management is based on biblical principles, asking God and pleading with God to give us wisdom on decisions we make about people and the programs and partnerships we have, and he has blessed us. He was then asked about the company's positions in support of marriage and family. Mr. Cathy went on to say, well, guilty as charged, we are very much supportive of the family, the biblical definition of the family unit. That was the beginning. CNN, the verminous, failed, hate-filled, left-wing fanatic network, ran a July 19th religion blog that said Chick-fil-A's marriage stance causing a social storm. In other words, they struck a match while pouring the gasoline. And then they went on to say the comments of company president Dan Cathy about gay marriage to Baptist Press on Monday have ignited a social media wildfire. By the way, Mr. Cathy never brought up gay marriage, as noted by the Weekly Standard's Mark Hemingway. All the individual did was defend the company's stance that families are paramount and that the company supports the family unit in its biblical definition. And look what happened to them. Now one fascist mayor after another is attacking this company. They're denying a private business permits because the owner believes in traditional marriage. Now, of course, this is unconstitutional. There may be a legal challenge, as University of California, Los Angeles law professor Eugene Volokh writes. Denying a private business permits because of such speech by its owner is a blatant First Amendment violation, even when it comes to government contracting, where the government is choosing how to spend government money. The government generally may not discriminate based on the contractor's speech. Of course, the ACLU should join Chick-fil-A and defend them. They won't do that. Instead, we're seeing obscene Christian bashing by individuals now, such as that slob Roseanne Barr and others of her failed ilk, attacking Christians, Christianity, and chicken. It's an interesting world that you're living in. Celebrating the Olympics is not something you should be doing today. You should be defending the First Amendment. And remember, Michael Savage cannot go to the Olympics. Not that I would go. It's because I am banned in Britain along with murderers and terrorists. And very few people in the media care to know about this. Did not even know I was banned in England. And by the way, it's not even about the English ban. It's about the election. Yep, freedom of speech. It really works.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thank you. to hear some of the audio we have for you today on the Savage Nation. It's really worth listening to. Ann and Mitt Romney gave an interview with CNN's Piers Morgan, the slimy limey. Listen to this.
Is he an emotional chap? Does he?
Very, which is something that people aren't seeing.
Does he cry a lot?
I would say that he's emotional. I wouldn't say that he cries a lot. He gets that tear in the eye a lot, but I wouldn't say he cries
a lot.
What
kind of thing could trigger that?
Mostly anything to do with his family. Mostly anything to do with whether it's a hymn or a very moving piece of music, or whether it's a book that he's read that is really deeply moving to him, or even a movie.
Last movie where you saw a Mitt tear trickle down his eye?
It's hard to say when is the last time we even saw a movie. I'm not even sure I'm going to remember that because we have so little time. Actually, what we do when we're together now, because we're so rarely together, and we're trying to get through season 2 of Downton Abbey.
Oh, fantastic, isn't it?
We love it.
The Romney Family Olympics?
I'm told that the Romney family have an annual Olympics. Is this true?
That's an overstatement by a wide margin.
Well, I'm going to come to your involvement.
A colloquial term.
Exactly. Is this true?
Yes. It really was very humorous this summer what we did because the boys decided that they weren't going to get everyone in the water and on the bike and on the run. So they did things like, how fast can you saw through this log? And they timed each other. I mean, how many nails can you get in like so fast? Then they did some other feats of strength.
I would imagine with five boys, it gets very competitive.
It was hilarious, though, that the things they came up with that they were going to compete with against this year. And I believe who won it? Was it Craig?
I think Craig won, but that it included shooting a certain number of baskets from the 3-point line, who could get the most in.
And they had a great deal of fun. I think more fun deciding what the competition was going to be, what the sports
standing broad jump, the shot put. We found a large rock, who could heave the rock the furthest, and those sorts of things. But,
here is Romney doing the right thing, saying he doesn't support new gun laws. Good for you, Mitt.
I don't support new gun laws in our country. We have a lot of gun laws now. We have background checks and other restrictions on gun ownership in our country. But as you say, we have 300 million guns in America. We have a Second Amendment that protects the right of people to bear arms. I support that. I think that the effort to continue to look for some law to somehow make violence go away is missing the point. The real point has to relate to individuals that are deranged and distressed, and to find them, to help them, and to keep them from carrying out terrible acts. Timothy McVeigh, how many people did he kill with fertilizer, with products that can be purchased legally anywhere in the world? He was able to carry out vast mayhem, somehow thinking that laws against the instruments of violence will make violence go away, I think is misguided.
And here he is, right on the money on success.
There are people who are trying to attack success and are trying to attack our success. That's not going to be successful. When you attack success, you have less of it. And that's what we've seen in our economy over the last few years. Dividing America based on who has money and who hasn't, who is successful and who is less successful, that is not the American way. We're a nation. I heard Marco Rubio the other day. He said, we were poor living in Miami. We saw these big homes across town. My parents never said to us, gee, why don't those people give some of what they have? They said instead, aren't we lucky to live in a country where with education and hard work, we might be able to achieve that ourselves. We're an achievement-celebrating oriented nation. That's what's lifted us. It will continue to do so. And the attacks that come by people who are trying to knock down my business career or my Olympic experience or our success, those attacks are not going to be successful. People want more success. They don't want less success.
And on running the Olympics, which he knows something about,
well, of course, the Olympics, that's very different than the country, and a business is very different than the country. But people who learn the experience of leadership, whether in their homes, in their community, in their business, or in something like the Olympics, those lessons of leadership can be applied to other circumstances. In our case at the Olympics, we faced tough times. We built a strong team. I was able to establish with them a clear vision of what we needed to do. We tackled a budget crisis that we faced, and we were able to come together in a way through unity that produced an extraordinary success. The country is in need of a turnaround. The Olympics was a turnaround. There were businesses I've been associated with that needed a turnaround. That kind of experience of focusing on the most critical issue, building the most effective team possible, creating a common vision, unifying around that vision, and then delivering results is something I think the American people would like to see in our economy right now.
And here's Obama turning a cabinet meeting into a campaign speech. Nothing new about that.
My administration is focusing on our economy and how do we make sure that this is an economy in which people who work hard, who act responsibly, can get ahead. Yesterday, the Senate voted to ensure that 98% of Americans don't see their taxes go up next year. It was the right thing to do. It will provide certainty and security to families who are already feeling pinched because of the economy. It will be good for the economy as a whole. Now, the only thing that is going to prevent the vast majority of Americans from not seeing a tax increase next year is if the House doesn't act. One of the things that I'm going to be doing, my cabinet members are going to be doing over the next several days, is to make sure that the American people understand that we can provide them certainty right now for next year that their taxes will not go up, and they will then be able to plan accordingly. Small businesses will be able to plan accordingly. I would urge the House of Representatives to do the right thing, and I'm going to make sure that my cabinet members amplify that message in the days to come.
Here's what's on michaelsavage.com. We've got breaking news. The Colorado killer was a psychiatric patient. That's right. It came out within just this afternoon. Did you know that? The Colorado killer was under the care of a psychiatrist at the university. Dr. Lynn Fenton reportedly saw Holmes as a patient. As near as a week before the attack, he was actually under the care of a shrink. A lot of good it did, huh? I guess that's sympathy for him. Two court orders were posted on a court website Thursday noting restrictions on information the University of Colorado could release about Holmes. The 24-year-old had recently dropped out of a PhD program in neuroscience out of the school's campus in Aurora. We don't know why. But the fact is that he was under the care of a psychiatrist, and it shows you what good that did him. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. The story is on my website, linked up from CNN. Also on the website, Harvey Weinstein calls for a summit on violence in the movies. That's Pablo Escobar saying we need a summit on drug dealing. Congressman's anti-big government rant gets a standing ovation. Five arrested in Pennsylvania for terrorizing a Jewish camp. The suspects allegedly chased poor little kids in a pickup truck, morons. Number two on the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list, Trickle-Down Tyranny. The one book you need to stop Obama before we lose all of our constitutional rights. Have you read it yet? Trickle-Down Tyranny on sale everywhere. Corzine's MF Global was client of Holder's law firm. Now you know why he hasn't been indicted for losing $1.7 billion. Muslim clerics say churches cannot be built in Islamic countries. Really? How about no mosques in Christian countries? Does that work? No, because Christians are tolerant, I see. Guess who wins that fight? The economy lost more than 200,000 small businesses. Muslim brothers plotting the overthrow of Gulf states. Thank you, Hillary. Iranian Olympic athlete won't compete with Israeli. That's because he knows he's going to get his Iranian butt whipped. Warner Brothers is violence. Interesting article on the fake global warming scare on my website, linked up from Fox News. Too complicated for me to read, but you should see it on the site. Also, Christians, attention. The ACLU hates you and your religion. The Oakland Zoo removes a Ten Commandments monument. A group of rotten, stinking atheists objected to it and said the Christians go to hell. Michael Savage, number two in shows streamed on the web. Right up there on the top. Also on my website. Feds raid Manhattan storage facility containing stolen art. Florida puppeteer accused in child porn case. He fantasized about cannibalism. Oh, my God. I never trusted puppeteers. Finally, on the bottom of michaelsavage.com, would you leave your child alone with a child puppeteer? I wouldn't. Dot-com millionaire hit with felony drug sale charges. She's going from dot-com to drug con. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation. Wait, hang on. Before I go, you know, I hate seeing my electric meter spinning around like some crazed hamster wheel. Running the AC is like watching dollar bills fly out of poorly insulated windows. It costs thousands to replace windows, but for a fraction of the cost, you can put gorgeous energy-saving solar shades over your windows from Blinds.com. Blinds.com saves my listeners and me in so many ways. They offer a huge selection of designer blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes at prices lower than Lowe's and Home Depot by posting free online how-to videos that make transforming any room in about 20 minutes very easy and by yourself. Listen, by making measuring so utterly goof-proof that even if you mismeasure, which is next to impossible, they'll remake it for free. Get free color samples, free shipping, no sales tax in most states, plus expert installers if you need one. Save an extra 20% on top brands through July 31st at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, where prices absolutely crush home improvement stores. Don't be blind. Go to Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Did you get it? Blinds.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let me tell you a funny hat story in Manhattan. It's a funny side story. It might be funny if you understand the mores of the streets of Manhattan, which apparently I forgot because I've been gone so long, I'm like a rube. So I go out to dinner one of the nights with my my agent and a couple of publishers. It was a nice dinner in some uptown restaurant. I didn't care for the food, honestly. I'm not into these long, you know, but it was jammed. I'm talking about 500 people packed. I don't know whether it was a restaurant that Sinatra ate in. The place I wanted to get into, this is a funny story, a secondary story. There was only one Italian restaurant I wanted to eat in, which nobody can get into. Even the owner can't get into it. It's so small. It's in the, you know, like 100 and whatever, 20th Street. Everybody, every entertainer, every wise guy thing, everybody wants to eat. I got their cookbook. I used their sauce. I wanted to go there. So this publisher publishes their cookbook and couldn't get in. And the owner says, I'm a fan of Michael Savage, but he couldn't give me a table. Can you believe this? That was the only Italian restaurant I wanted to eat in. I couldn't get in. So I went where he wanted to go, whatever. So we're eating, hundreds of people, everyone. You know, Manhattan restaurants are great in the sense if you like the buzz and the crowd and people looking, whatever. I couldn't take it every night. Truthfully, I'd rather get a chicken from Safeway most nights and talk to my dog and watch the news and go on a bike ride and look at a seagull. But, okay, you go to the restaurant, jam, the meal, till it came, you could faint. And it's such a fancy Italian restaurant that they don't even serve bread. Now you understand how expensive it's going to be. There's not a piece of bread on the table. Not even. And this was so expensive, there wasn't even a breadstick. See, the more expensive, the less food, of course. And it's so déclassé to have bread, they don't have it. And even a breadstick is a mark of a cheap Italian restaurant. The real death knell is a meatball, which is the only thing I wanted to eat, but they didn't have. So I ordered something I didn't want, and I ate it. And my fingers were like, the hands didn't work in the bed at night. I couldn't move the wrist or the hand. I suspect either it was a high salt content or some dipping thing that they did in the kitchen or some extracted sauce that some schmendrick came up with from a cooking school that must add 600 grams of salt, you know, per milliliter. Nevertheless, I'm dressed, you know, my normal way. I just, okay, I'm not going to dress like a schmuck in a restaurant. I'll tell you exactly what I wore. It's an outfit I like. I wore a black velour jacket, which I love because wherever I go, no matter where I am, it looks good. It's like a retro. Everyone thinks it's retro, but then the guys look at you and say, God, I wish I had one. You know what I mean? I bought it a few years ago, but it was a big thing from the 70s. This was a new one. So I wear it at night wherever I go. Florida, here, everyone loves it. Women love this jacket, black velour. And I have a striped, like, plum purple shirt with a purple tie. Very cool, nice pants, dark pants, whatever. And I have a hat, which you've seen on the cover of Psychological Nudity, if you bought that book. It's a gray Gucci hat, like a little hat, small hat. I don't wear it for effect. I think it's a beautiful hat, and I wear it particularly when it is sun out. I don't want sun on my head, but I don't want to wear a goofy hat. I don't want to wear a cowboy hat. I don't want to wear a cowboy hat and look like Midnight Cowboy. I don't want to wear a big hat or a dumb hat or a liberal hat or, you know, a floppy hat. So it's like a kind of like nice singer's hat. So, okay, wear it in the street. That's okay. I go in the restaurant, and I had it on my head. Even though it was nighttime, the sun was still out. The burning sun, I had it on. Go in, sit down, eat the meal. It's 2 hours later. As I'm leaving, I forgot to add the hat. I put it on my head. As I'm walking out, I didn't even realize I had my hat on until four guys who were right out of The Sopranos start pointing at me and mocking me and laughing. Like, who's that schmuck with the hat on? Who does he think he is? I saw it in 2 seconds because I grew up in New York. It was like being in high school again, you know, with the bullies. I didn't give a damn. I'm so disconnected from social interaction and from caring about who says what that I didn't even get offended by it. Thank God I didn't, or I would have wound up in the back of a garbage truck. I didn't even get offended. I looked at them and pointed and said, thank you. That's all I said as we walked out of the restaurant. Then I realized they were mocking my hat because I was wearing a hat like I was a big shot or I was being trying to be cool. And they were right in a way. Who wears a hat in a restaurant? But the point is, it was a funny side story of a hat. Now, where was I before the hat story, Beowulf? I got distracted on the hat. Oh, that's the whole hat story? That was the whole hat story. Now you know why I'm number two in the internet and radio. Why? Because you want me to sit here and bash Obama? How much can I do? I wrote Trickle Up Poverty. It sold almost 300,000 in hardcover. I wrote Trickle Down Tyranny. Okay? Many of you bought it. Many of you are too cheap or too ignorant to buy it. Many of you are too, let us say, stingy to buy a copy for your liberal friend. You complain about them, but you don't buy them the one book that you need to buy in order for them to go and make up their mind about the criminality that's going on in the country. I can't help that. So I'm not going to spend every day talking about Obama. The man is a disaster. If he wasn't controlled by the few Republicans with the guts to stand up to him, we'd be living in a Marxist dictatorship.
Savage.
There is still a great deal of anxiety among Americans. The numbers show that we are moving in the right direction.
A 30-minute sexual assault.
A Pennsylvania woman died.
There are a lot of psychopaths in the world.
Kill a man walking by.
The killing.
Fire guns from helicopters. A bullet in his neck.
10,000 wounded.
Soldiers are firing randomly. Cause a sense of terror.
After the man was stabbed, he later died.
This is a picture of the alleged rape still up on the website.
The rape of a teenage girl.
An arsenal of weapons.
Police are on the scene of an apparent murder-suicide.
Murder-suicide tonight. Take a look at some video we shot just moments ago.
Killing.
Sexual assault.
Terror.
Rape.
Psychopath.
A teacher and priest accused of trying to meet up with a 14-year-old girl for sex.
A mother of two stabbed to death. A young mother just days from giving birth to her second child found burned to death in her own home.
Calmly plotting to kill his wife, Lynette, and 18-year-old daughter, Kayleen.
The brutal death of a 24-year-old beautiful nursing student. Take us through this terrible story from the beginning.
You know about the tragedy, of course, in the Colorado movie theater last weekend. Well, the accused shooter is conducting such antics in the courtroom that they're leading many to believe that his legal team will plead insanity for his defense. Joining us now on the Savage Nation is Paul Samico with the Washington Times. Paul, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I really appreciate you having me on today. Looking forward to being able to talk with you here a little bit.
What do you think his chances are that he'll get off on an insanity defense plea?
The words that you use to get off are exactly the concern of everybody. And I'll offer statistically, just to begin, this individual has committed these crimes. This is not going to be about who did it. We are going to find very easily that a court of law will find that this was the shooter. He was the killer. 12 people died. 58 people were injured. There's no question who pulled the trigger. The only possibility for this guy was James Holmes to get off, as you say, is by raising a defense of insanity. Now, statistically, 3% nationwide, 3% of people, defendants, who claim insanity win with that defense. So before we even get to the state of Colorado, where it's even more difficult, probably it's even less than 3%, before we even get there, the likelihood of this individual getting off is extremely small. I want to provide just a little bit of background so that you have an understanding here of really what is involved when someone comes up before court and says, I'm not responsible because of my mental condition. We call that insanity. Way back in 1843 in England, there was some guy, schizophrenic, who thought he was being persecuted, and he killed somebody and then claimed that he was insane at the time. The guy's name was McNaughton. Now, Mr. McNaughton won with that defense. He was not convicted of the killing that he perpetrated. After that, the House of Commons in England was very, very upset and wanted standards set so that someone claiming insanity couldn't just walk into the court and say, I'm not responsible, I wasn't in my right mind. And out of that beginning, there developed what has come to be known as the McNaughton Rule.
Well, what is that?
The slim down of it is basically, if you don't know the difference between right and wrong, then it's acceptable to say that you are insane. Now, the proof of that is psychiatric testimony. Doctors who have examined you and can come to court and say, yeah, this cowboy had no clue in the world what he was doing. He didn't know right from wrong. Those are the key words from the McNaughton test, and that has carried into the United States and has always been part of our criminal justice culture when someone claims insanity. Colorado has an additional element that must be proven. Many, many states just simply use that test. But Colorado has one more that makes it even more difficult for individuals to come across in those courtrooms and say they were insane and they get off, as the expression goes, on the insanity defense. The second type of claim that must be proven by an insane defendant is that he was suffering from a genuine mental illness at the time of the crime. It can't be something that was drug-induced, as an example. In other words, if we use the drug, say, phencyclidine, PCP, this drug is known to affect our brains chemically, and clearly someone under the strong influence of PCP could be said to be insane because they really would not know right from wrong.
Hmm.
But that's not going to be a basis to claim genuine mental illness. So when we get all of this through the funnel, Mr. Holmes' defense has got an extraordinary uphill battle here. They've got to show he was suffering from a mental illness that was genuine and that he didn't know right from wrong at the time. With everything that we've seen in the news already, this was a premeditated series of killings that he perpetrated in that movie theater. He planned it. I just don't see any possibility at all that this guy is going to walk on an insanity defense. It's just not going to happen.
And what's going to happen with the civil suit, in your opinion?
Well, this is, a completely different kind of a concept. In the criminal world, Michael, we have guilty and innocent, the prosecution, which is the state, and the defendant, who is on trial for a crime allegedly committed by him. And the burden of proof in the criminal venue is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a pretty high standard that the prosecutor or the state has to have evidence that meets to find a defendant guilty. Now we go to civil. It's a different standard. This is about money. And in civil claims, absenting our issues of divorce and child custody, domestic relations, they're about money. People making a claim against another person or corporation versus corporation, business versus business, claiming something happened and the other one owes me money. More often than not, it is a claim of negligence. We can make an analogy here to an automobile collision. I was stopped at a red light and you hit me from behind as a result of your not paying attention. You were negligent. And so as a result of that type of a case, I have a neck injury, and I had to go to the doctor, and I had to miss 2 weeks of my job, and I lost wages. So I'm looking for money to compensate me for all of these types of things. Well, the civil case that has already been filed here in this movie theater incident was being filed by a guy by the name of Torrence Brown. And he has some very interesting legal theories. He has actually sued the movie theater. He sued James Holmes' doctors. And he sued the film studio. So let me just run down these three real quick and offer some thoughts on why I don't believe Mr. Brown is going to be in a position to recover any money at all.
Why not?
The first part of a negligence claim is that I was injured. Well, Mr. Brown was not injured. Now, his best friend was killed. That's very upsetting. But negligence law requires some kind of a physical injury. We can't just make a claim for emotional distress and psychiatric or psychological injury because we witnessed something. Most states don't allow that, and I believe Colorado is the same. So when we get to the people or the entities that he sued, let's start with the doctors. He's claiming that the doctors should have monitored the medication that Holmes was on, and they should have foreseen that Holmes' violent tendencies were such that if he was off the medications, he was going to do something like this. That claim has absolutely zero chance of going anywhere. The lawyers for the doctors are going to come in and ask to have their clients' doctors released from the case, dismissed, and they will win. There's no foreseeability issue here. That's really, really stretching it. They've also, Mr. Brown has also sued the film studio on the theory that the Dark Knight movies were a blueprint for the crime that James Holmes committed. Again, this is a real, real far stretch. It's never going to fly. You know, we have exposure in our world to all sorts of things that doesn't motivate us if we are, you know, the average kind of person walking around to commit crimes because we see crimes being committed. We can read about crimes in the newspaper. We can see them in the movies. We can see it on TV. We can read magazines. This theory has never worked, and it's not going to work. The only possibility here is the claim against the movie theater, where Mr. Brown is claiming that the theater was negligent because they did not have alarms on the emergency doors. Now, Brown claims that this alarm, this lack of alarm on the emergency doors, allowed Holmes to exit the theater after purchasing his ticket and come back in with his cache of weapons. I think that's a real stretch. I don't know that it's accurate. I don't know that you're going to have a situation where you're going to be, if you're a movie theater, that you have an obligation to have an alarm on your emergency doors or your exit doors. I just don't know that that's the standard in a movie theater, and certainly to anticipate that something like this would happen, that somebody could go back out and bring in guns, and that's the reason you should have your doors alarmed. Again, a very, 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 very big stretch here for Mr. Brown. I don't see this gentleman winning his lawsuit. When we get to the victims and the families of the victims, it's going to be a very interesting view from the legal community standpoint to see where and how they might successfully seek compensation and from whom. I still haven't yet figured out where this is going to happen. The movie theater is an interesting argument about the alarms on the doors, but I just don't know that that's going to fly.
What kind of timeline are we looking at?
Well, the process in Colorado, as I understand it, and again, I'm an attorney in the Washington, D.C. area. My license is in Virginia and in Maryland. I don't practice law in Colorado, never have. Been there, very beautiful state. But my understanding that relatively soon we're going to see the arraignment. At the arraignment, Mr. Holmes' counsel will enter a plea for him. If they enter a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity, immediately the court is going to order psychiatric testing. And the purpose of the testing is not to determine if he was insane. The purpose of the testing by psychiatrists will be to determine if Mr. Holmes is competent to stand trial, if he can participate in his own defense. And assuming that he can, then they will go forward to trial. Now, we have the constitutional requirement of a speedy trial, and in most places around the United States, my understanding is that's usually about 6 months. So I would imagine that before the end of this calendar year, we are going to see a trial. If it is that initially we can learn that Mr. Holmes is competent to stand trial, that is, that he can participate in his own defense. Of course, if it's determined that he cannot participate in his own defense, then it might just hang there and he would be bound over to some psychiatric facility or a hospital until such time as he was able to help formulate a defense and be a part of in defending himself, as it were. So that could go on and on and on. I mean, the example that we have certainly is, you know, the Arizona situation about a year or two ago, whatever it was, with Gabby Giffords and the other people in that Arizona shopping center where the defendant was bound over for a long time until they could determine that he was similarly able to participate in his defense. So this case could go on and on and on. We just have to wait and see what happens at the arraignment.
Where can we read more?
Thank you so much for asking. Yeah, my personal website, I'll spell this for you slowly, is samicolaw.com, and I have a great deal of information about all of these things, excerpts from my own segment on a radio show that I'm involved in here every week. Samico Law is SAMAKOWLAW, samicolaw.com. So visitors to that website can listen to clips of when I'm on the radio here locally. There's all kinds of other good, fun stuff that's useful for lots of different purposes.
Paul Samico, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
It was certainly a pleasure being with you today, Michael. Good luck to you and you know what you're doing. You're doing a great job.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Look any further than what this illegitimate, evil, anti-American Democrat Party does to Alan West. Here's a guy, do I have to say to you he's African-American or black? He's black guy. A lifetime military guy, lieutenant colonel. His father was in the military. His uncle was in the military. He's as good American as you're ever going to find. A hero, right? Now, thanks to 100 years of Fabian socialism, and the Gramscian method of marching through the institutions, in the particularly the colleges where they're brainwashed. Here we have a hero soldier, Alan West, who was forcibly retired. Why? Because he was mean to a genocidal, head-shopping enemy in order to save the life of his men. And then you have a Democrat Party, Democrats, who vilify Alan West. And you have a Democrat Party backed by a plutocrat who allegedly was a former NSDP collaborator in World War II, poses as a Holocaust victim. And if you say one word about this NSDP collaborator, they call you an anti-Semite. That's the country that we're living in. That is the country that we're living in. That a major political party like the Democrats can feel comfortable calling Alan West a certifiable great American hero, a war criminal, while catering to the 7th century psychopaths at Guantanamo Bay Daycare Center tells me everything I need to know about never, ever voting for one of these dog catchers called Democrats again. And that leads me right back to the garbage of Manhattan. Garbage in, garbage out. Why is Obama not spending a nickel campaigning in New York? He doesn't have to. Because these self-righteous idiots who think that they're brilliant in every way, who don't know anything about what's going on right under their noses, are going to vote for him no matter what. No matter what, if the pictures were published of Obama doing the most vile thing, they would say, so what, they all do it. I'm not going to vote for that guy. You're going to vote for that guy, Romney, that Mormon? No, I don't want a bigot like a Mormon in there. See what I just said? You catch that line? I don't want a bigot like a Mormon in there in the White House. Catch that line? You understand that line? You understand the paradox of that line? The woman, the mock woman I'm making up. I don't want a bigot like that Mormon in the White House. Get it? Understand it? Well, you better understand it. You're dealing with brainwashed idiots like the one with the fake hyphenated name in Florida, whatever her name is, hyphenated, mishyphenated woman who hates Alan West. She couldn't shine that guy's shoes. That's how great he is and that's how low she is. And yet she's a politician in America in the year 2012. So don't get me started on my contempt for what these Democrat Marxist socialists have done, are doing, and will do unless they're stopped in their tracks. Now you know why I'm number two in the world on the internet and radio, and I'm listened to around the world. How do you explain that they survey 1.2 million people? Now this is look, I'm an epidemiologist by training. This is a big sample. You know, you sample 15 people, it means nothing. You want to put out a false study, you sample 30 people, right? And come up with some fake conclusion that this is a carcinogen or people want to vote for Obama. You have a sample of 1.2 million people. They sample 1.2 million listeners during the first 6 months of 2012. They produce the Power 50 Reporter, the 50 most influential talk show hosts on the internet and on mobile devices, and I'm number two. How is that possible? If I'm ignored, I don't exist. Michael Savage is nobody, blah, blah, blah. I'm number two. How is this possible? Rush is number one, as you'd expect, not because he's so intelligent, but because he's got the biggest outlet. He's got the best distribution. If you have a bad drink and you're on every shelf in the country, you're bound to be number one for a long while. But I have almost no distribution in some places, and I'm still number two on the internet. It's unbelievable. Here's guys who think they're such big shots, like Mark Groucho, Sean Wallbanger, number six and seven. Mark Groucho, Sean Wallbanger. O'Reilly isn't here because he failed in radio, so he's gone. Of course I'm going to be happy with the results. I didn't get here by accident, nor do I stay here by accident. I want to thank them for this study. So, will it be mush, hush, slush, or plush on the Savage Nation? Well, we can talk about garbage in New York, which is, again, I'm like the guy from another planet who goes there and sees garbage. No one else sees it.
Savage.